BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Five Lives, Rugby Union Daily.
So, Orchard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ugo Monya. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Was just trying to phrase what round three of the Six Nations is or how it feels. And to coin a golfing term, it feels like moving day, but it's moving weekend in round three. Because when you look at the connotations, the possibilities and the outcomes, it does feel quite significant. Would you agree?
Hugely significant. I'd say more significant, though, in particular for the Calcutta Cup clash between Scotland and England. It's basically going to make or break one of their championships, isn't it? Say it like it is.
Well, Scotland lose, they're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cheerio. If England lose, it sets up round four really well with Ireland and England. We're presuming Ireland are going to beat Wales. And then round four, it's everything to play for, the only two unbeaten sides. So that feels massive.
Absolutely huge. And should we get on with the big news of the day, Ugo?
Tell me.
99, not out. Your best mate, Danny Kerr, continues his quest for 100. He is starting for England. One of five changes. Let's just give him his one moment in the sun. He was always going to start, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's weird because the closer you are to it, the more nervous you feel about it. Because if you've been in the match day 23 the last couple of weeks, and then Alex Mitchell picks up an injury as he did last week, you think, oh, well, of course he's got to start. But then you're like, oh, gosh. Oh, but maybe they see him as a finisher, and maybe Spencer's going to start. But I'm thrilled for Danny. 99 not out, as you said, in a game from an English perspective. I don't know. Spoken to a few Scottish people this week that they're fairly comfortable now with the challenge of England coming up. With England, it's that nettle, which I haven't quite been able to grasp. So I'm thrilled that Danny gets the nod from the start.
I don't know how objectively we can break down Danny starting. Because obviously Ben Spencer, we know, is going to be on the bench. Great for him, obviously, because of the season he's had at Bath, really. But I was just thinking, Danny Kerr, 37 years old now. Lionel Messi, 36, started the other day for Miami in the MLS. Which of the two is going to retire first? And when I say Messi, I do mean Lionel Messi. I don't mean Finn Russell.
You don't know. Danny, he did a lovely article, Chris Foy, this week, saying that his body feels great. But if you're chucking £500,000 a week at Lionel Messi, you ain't retiring for anyone, are you? Come on. So he's going to carry on playing whether his body is able to or not, because they're throwing that amount of cash at him.
Why not? Okay, right. So we've given Danny his moment. Let's move on to the rest of the England team. If people don't know, five changes for England. Of course, we're going to have full commentary at Murrayfield of Scotland against England. We're going to be heading up to Edinburgh shortly to find out everything about Scotland and their team changes for the Calcutta Cup match. Chris Jones is up there already. He'll have Tom English with him. A little bit later, myself and Ugo will also be discussing Ireland against Wales. But the big news from the England camp isn't Danny Kerr. Sorry about that, Danny. It's actually that Freddie Stewart has been dropped and George Furbank is going to be starting at 15. Let's run you through all those changes. You've got Genge and Cole. They're the props. They've been rotated. And then the rest of the changes go into the back. So you've got Danny Kerr starting. We knew about Alex Mitchell's injury. Ollie Lawrence comes in, but perhaps that was expected by everyone. The big shocker that I don't think anyone was necessarily expecting is that Freddie Stewart is not injured. He has been dropped. It is for selection purposes. And Northampton Saints' George Furbank starts at 15. I was really surprised when I saw this, Ugo. I did quickly go back and thought back to the Wales game. I couldn't think of anything necessarily that Freddie Stewart had done wrong in that match. You know, he's, as always, he was up there with his carrying meters, you know, with his kicking. He didn't really put a foot wrong. What do you think the reason is behind this?
I really rate Freddie Stewart. And when he plays for England, he's been very good. He's very dependable. You know what he brings in the air, kicking option, his coverage of the backfield. But he doesn't have the same attacking threat as George Furbank. So we've chatted about it, and I was having a conversation with someone after the Wales game, and I said, I'd love to see George Furbank at 15. This is off the back of Freddie Stewart playing really well. But Freddie's ceiling of potential in attack, I think we know what that looks like. Where George Furbank coming in at 15, I think just heightens the ability for England to be able to attack and be more coherent and actively just be a bit more dangerous and score more points. So I think George Furbank has come in just with an attack in mind to be able to allow this England backline to function better to improve their attack. And whilst I'm a massive fan of Freddie Stewart, I am so pleased with George Furbank because I think he's an exceptional player.
I'm hearing everything you're saying, and I don't want to take anything away from Furbank's selection. He's had a fantastic season with Northampton. You know, he has really spearheaded them in so many different areas. And, you know, credit to him, he's been leading the Saints as well in the absence of Lewis Ludlam. I remember he signed a new contract just at the start of the year, and Phil Dowson, his director of rugby, coming out and saying, you know, he's playing the best rugby of his career. The only thing I would say is there's five changes to this England side. Five is a big number. And arguably, with all the other changes, props perhaps you can understand, they get rotated, they get tired, they're pretty stable, the England props, but three in the backs, was it necessary to bring in Stewart?
To bring
in Furbank? You think it was? See, I just think it's a big change to a team that have got two wins under their belt.
No, I'm really chuffed with it. I'm really chuffed. One, because the obvious thing is, like, we're two from two, we're settled. This team, whilst they have got two decent results, they're not quite where they want to be. And I think Furbank just raises the potential of their attack in this team. Ollie Lawrence, I don't think is a massive surprise. Fraser Dingwall has played very well, but Ollie Lawrence is a totally different threat, especially with Tua Pulotu up against him. I love the look at it, but when you look statistically at Scotland, and I've forgotten the exact numbers, but in the last like 30 or test matches, 80% of the time, Scotland have reached at least 20 points or more. So the question and the challenge to England is, from what we've seen in the first couple of weeks, can this England team score more than 20 points? I think with Furbank coming into the side and with the focal point of an Ollie Lawrence, I think that increases their chances. So this is an attack-minded selection, and the only reason I'm surprised by it is because it's very unlike Steve Borthwick. It's safe, it's solid, it's foundations, it's all those things, but this England team wants to move on, wants to progress, and this could be a real point of difference to them.
I can see that you are a big Furbank fan. I can feel it emanating from you, Ugo.
On the evidence of this year, like, I tell you what, he deserves it. And you could probably say that for every Northampton Saints player.
And I agree with you. I do just think, as I said, it's a lot of changes for what should be a team that should be starting to get settled now. But we do have to move on, Ugo. Ollie Lawrence, you know, what a season he's had for Bath. Understandably, everyone's talked about the muscle that he's going to bring in. He's over that hip injury. He's selected ahead of Manu Tuilagi. Now, I have a little bit of a theory here. If you think about great teams in centre partnerships, you always think about maybe Gordon Darcy, you think about Brian O'Driscoll, Greenwood and Tindall, Nonu and Smith. England haven't had that for years and years and years. Do you feel maybe with Lawrence coming in, if he can just get a decent run, you know, with a Henry Slade, that could just in somehow, everything you've just said about England's attack, just solidify something there?
I think whilst the job spec for Ollie Lawrence and Manu Tuilagi is quite similar, and they do it at a very decent rate, don't they, in attack, I think Ollie Lawrence's discipline in defence is better. And by that I mean he doesn't jump, doesn't chase, doesn't shoot off on his own to potentially expose the defensive line. And when you look at who's running it at 10 for Scotland with Finn Russell, he's an absolute nightmare of a fly half to defend against, just because he has the skill level and he does it so flat to the line and so late. So if Ollie Lawrence coming in, I'm actually really pleased. If I'm just to skate across and just look at the bench for England, it's probably an area where I'm most pleased. I look at Theo Dan, ball carrier, Joe Marler, ball carrier, Will Stewart, ball carrier, George Martin, ball carrier, Chandler Cunningham himself, ball carrier. When we speak about perhaps not being underpowered, we're going to bring in, I guess, from Edinburgh just in a moment, a few shakes of the head there. So I'm not sure if everyone's agreeing. But I think at times they've looked like they've needed a few more horses under the hood. And I think they may have it this weekend.
Well, you mentioned there were a few people coming in from Edinburgh. That is, of course, all of the England team news that we've had today, the five England changes there. But let's find out what's happening with Scotland. Come in, Edinburgh. It's like the Eurovision Song Contest all of a sudden, isn't it? Hello, Chris. Hello, Tom English.
Sorry, I was muted there, Sarah. So our great big entry, slightly anticlimactic. Here in Edinburgh, we've just been at the Gregor Townsend press conference where he's named his side. Three changes, really interesting. Tom English is here of Nations Pod and BBC Scotland fame. I mean, loads to get into, isn't there, guys? When you look at Scotland and England's team, both head coaches kind of declaring their hand this afternoon.
Well, we have just gone through the England team. So if you guys just quickly give us one thought each on the England team, then we need to talk about Scotland. So what's your thinking?
So my take on the England team is I definitely hear what Ugo's saying about George Firbeck in attack, but I also think there's a defensive element to this as well, because he's quicker across the ground than Freddie Stewart. And Finn Russell's been kicking loads this Six Nations and long. And I think that will be a tactic to try and pin England with long kicking meters and try and win that duel. So I think Firbeck, as good as he is in attack, this is also a selection with defence in mind.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I just think of the speed that Firbeck will offer in the backfield. Because otherwise, Ugo, and you said, Steve Borthwick, it's a surprise that he's made this call. And I do agree in one sense, but he's also, through his coaching career, particularly at Leicester, has made the odd pick out of left field. In a couple of finals, he picked Jack Van Portfleet kind of out of nowhere when there were more experienced nines who would have been, you'd have thought, better suited to a final. So he's got this in his locker. Look at Marcus Smith at the World Cup playing against Fiji rather than Stewart. I think it's a horses for courses, as much about defence as attack. I do think that, and I think it's also about the balance in the back line. When you take out a Fraser Dingwall and you put in Ollie Lawrence, you get power, you get dynamism, you get size, you lose a bit of footballing ability. So I think, Tom, and I don't know what you think, potentially from a Scotland point of view, it just feels as if when I first saw that Stewart call, I thought, wow, never saw it coming. And then the more you think about it, you look at the balance of the back line, the kicking meters Scotland have been doing this Six Nations, there's obviously a lot of thought that's gone into it from Borthwick.
Of course, and it is a huge, it's a massive call, and you're right. I imagine England rugby fans, as much as Scotland rugby fans, are surprised that this call has been made. Everyone is expecting Freddie Stewart. I know, you know, form is imperative here. So Firbeck has got form in the Premiership, a competition that I think people in England, forgive me, overrate, overblow the quality of it. But I've listened to Ugo there, and I'm now convinced, I'm buying into Ugo's logic here. I think Ugo, it's going to be a landslide victory for this incredible England team, and a grand slam, Ugo, is in the bag. You more or less said it, didn't you? You're calling it.
I'm basically calling it, yeah. you're right, but on Firbeck, because while Scotland do kick a lot, and they kicked over a mile in the last game against France, yeah, so you're expecting lots of that, I don't think this is the defensive selection at all, because whilst Firbeck is quicker than Stewart, Stewart's never out of position. So it's not like he needs to have the pace to get across, because you only really need to show jet shoes, either if the kick is absolutely exceptional or if you're out of position. And Freddie Stewart rarely ever finds that. And whilst we've lost Dingwall in the centres for his lovely touches and playmaking ability, we've got a 70 capper in Henry Slade that's barely been able to be deployed in that position, because I think Dingwall and Slade's remit was almost too similar at times. Now the delineation of labour is so obvious, I think it might free up Henry Slade to do what he does best with ball in hand, which hopefully allows and gives more time and breathing space to Ollie Lawrence as well.
Yeah, and just finally on England before we move on to Scotland, because some really interesting calls Gregor Townsend's made, but just literally standing where Townsend just finished his press conference. I definitely hear Sarah's point. I know the props are interchangeable. Five changes does sound quite kind of, wow, attention grabbing. It's a third of the starting 15. The props, though, are interchangeable. One is enforced at number nine with Kerr starting. It's just that ideally you wouldn't take two men out the back line if you're making one change, but it feels as if the change with Lawrence coming in then may I don't think, if Dingwall starting in the centre, Firbeck plays at fullback, I think it's about the balance of the seven or the six outside the scrum half. And so yes, I'm sure it's been drilled to the ground. I'm sure it's a plan. You just wonder, having been so settled between Italy and Wales with this new side, always talk about cohesion and continuity, suddenly five changes, including three in the back line. So, yeah, I can definitely understand Sara's concern from that point of view, but dead exciting. He's in great form, as you've touched upon. I think he's playing the rugby of his career. George Furbank really deserves it, but we will see. The jury's still out about him as an international fullback. That's not harsh. That's just the reality of the games he had in 2020, the game he had in Paris in 2022. He was throwing a real tough ass playing a Grand Slam chasing France that night. But what a night for him to show he can cut it at the top level. And there aren't many tougher places than a kind of do or die Six Nations game at Murrayfield when you've lost the last three.
Well, the reason that we actually brought in Murrayfield was to talk about the Scotland team, but I'm glad that we've definitely finished off England there. Now, Tom, I'm looking at you because the last time I saw you at Murrayfield, I was giving you a cuddle because I was so worried about where your mood was at after the try, no try incident, to which after we finished our embrace, you shouted at me across the commentary area. You shouted, "I'm not even Scottish!"
He sometimes is. I mean, he picks and chooses.
I'm a wannabe Scot.
Yeah, 20 guys, years, you know, 20 I mean, years. In the motherland.
20 years here. You're not picking up a Scottish accent, but part of me is Scottish for sure by now.
But but Gregor Townsend, Tom, addressed that at the top of his press conference. Our colleague Andy Burke asked him, because the first time he's spoken since the immediate aftermath of the game, so it was still a hot topic. And I was quite impressed with the way he really did put it to bed. And there was a bit of gallows humour that he was saying that in training, Sam Skinner scored a try and everyone went nuts celebrating. So it feels as if the Scotland team, if the journalists following them haven't parked it, the team and the coaches probably have.
But what choice have they got? You know, I mean, this can't linger on. The only thing that they can do with that episode now is use it. I mean, you go, you know, you will have used things in your career, maybe slights or a bit of bitterness. I come from a place, Munster, that just trades on bitterness, you know, loves it to create that siege mentality. So maybe Ugo, out of a bad situation, they could turn it into a positive and use it against, bring that fury against England on Saturday.
I think in one-offs, you absolutely can. Just the interesting thing for me with Scotland is, their last two matches, this Six Nations, they've actually come off the pitch with a bit of feeling or a bit of taste in their mouth. They won up at the Principality and were like, ugh, this doesn't feel like as it should, considering we've had to wait over two decades. Against France, they should have won it. And we went through on Rugby Special. They had a 3-on-1 if they could just look up. They didn't need a TMO intervention. And so it bit them in the backside. And so I don't think it would have been a conversation, a focal point. I think the focus would be for them, and this is the danger for England, is 15 minutes through to 80, why did Scotland stop playing when they were in charge, when they had the momentum, when they were on top? I think that's the major lesson for them going into this England, into this England fixture. If they are on top with 20 to go, they're not going to be just sat back kicking the ball. They'll be wanting to chase more tries and actually properly put their foot down on the pedal.
And on that point, Oogs, Tom did put it to Gregor Townsend about how Scotland have been, you know, outpointed quite heavily in the final 20 minutes of their two games. And Townsend said, look, it's a two-match sample. You can't read too much into it. But he also made the point that they've ended both games over the try line. So it's where Scotland are quite kind of, we spoke earlier in the week on the pod about how England are perplexing to analyse. It's quite the same for Scotland. They finished scoring a held up try against Wales, and if that had scored, that could have changed the whole complexion, and they could have weathered the Welsh storm, got the try bonus point and danced off into the Cardiff night. And then if they had got the try that they scored against France, they're 2-from-2 and in fine fettle. Yeah. So the margins are super fine here.
They are, but the fact is they didn't score against Wales, and no one's going to dispute that. It wasn't a try. Against France it was, but it wasn't given.
But they're still finishing the game. I mean, it's not the last 20, but they are ending the game in a strong position.
Yeah, but
despite the stats being against them.
I know, but I mean, you know, they could finish strongly, but if they don't score, what use is their strong finish and territory and possession and chances and overlaps? If
they do you don't get a bonus point for possession?
if you don't execute. I mean, if you look at the last 20 minutes, and I know Gregor is saying it's a small sample size, and it is, but this is a 5-game season. It's not a 38-game season. So it's 2 out of 5, which is actually, in a way, is a quite a large sample. And Scotland have conceded the highest points total in the second half of the first two games combined of any of the teams. So I know Gregor is kind of swatting it away. I think in his head he's thinking, okay, we've started games really well. We need to finish them well, and we need to execute. We've got all the possession of territory, but we need to be more clinical.
And just on the changes Townsend's made, guys, three in all, Kyle Steyn and Blair Kinghorn both back available, having not been available, and then Jamie Ritchie in for Matt Fagerson, which, Tom, is selection, not injury.
Yep.
Took me by surprise, because I always think Ferguson's one of Scotland's, you know, best forwards. But there is loads of competition when you chuck in an Andy Christie into that mix. And Townsend's been a bit horses for courses, because Ritchie didn't play last week. He's now starting, played against Wales in Cardiff. So did that take you by surprise? Yeah,
absolutely. I thought the pecking order at six currently was Ferguson, Christie, Ritchie. Ritchie starts, loses the captaincy, starts against Wales, not in the 23 for France. He's now back in the starting lineup on the back of a performance against Zebra last week, which I thought, I watched the game. I didn't think Jamie Ritchie stood out in any shape or form. I thought it was a very average Edinburgh performance. But he's back in the team ahead of Ferguson, who's one of Scotland's big ball carriers. I know he's not carrying a lot this season so far, but he's capable of it, and he has done it season after season. And Christie was singled out for praise by Gregor Townsend in the post-match press conference after France. And he wasn't even asked a question about Andy Christie. He said, look, I just want to say something about Andy Christie, who played really well off the bench. So I'm thinking, okay, Christie's in the 23. I'm really surprised that Ferguson is not there, and I'm surprised that Ritchie is back in the starting lineup.
And so to pick up on something you guys were chatting about earlier with the benches, and maybe that's part of the reason Christie's being held back, because he provides dynamism off the bench. We know what a good player George Horn is, and Cam Redpath is, you know, was superb in this fixture, albeit at Twickenham a few years back. Sam Skinner made an impact, could have been a try-scoring hero. The props, I mean, Alec Hepburn was in the England wilderness. Now he's the Loosehead replacement. Elliot Miller-Mills has kind of come from nowhere. He certainly hasn't been someone touted for international honours for much of recent period. So I don't know. How do you, Sara Nugo, view that kind of battle of the bench? Because it has been a feature of England's that they have been able to bring on some big carriers, especially guys like Dan and Cunningham South.
Isn't this quite an easy one, that if you look at those two benches this weekend, which one would you rather have? Which I think on the balance that you would probably rather have England's bench when it comes to the power and the experience that's there. And you look how those props have been rotated. In particular, you mentioned the likes of Elliot Millar-Mills there for Scotland. The experience there, England's scrum has been going well. And I think that's something they'll hang their hat on. And if they do revert to type, they don't necessarily have to. I know you guys mentioned the weather back on the Nations Pod back on Tuesday. It looks like quite a nice day, actually. A balmy, I think it's gone down to about 5 or 6 mm-hmm. degrees now, Tom. Still not quite, you know, shorts weather, but I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Sarah, that's T-shirt weather here.
But my point is that I still think England will grind out if they have to. And their bench could be a big part of that. Ugo?
England have a good scrum, but this weekend it actually needs to be a point of difference. Has to be. You cannot look at that Scotland bench and that scrum and the props that they have, and for Joe Marler, for Will Stewart, for Theo Dan to go, right, let's properly get into this. Has to be. Like, make it a point of difference. Punish Scotland for their lack of strength and depth in the scrum. I mean, this is not me being harsh. This is not me being biased against England. But when you look head to head, man for man, anyone, if you had to select Alex Hepburn over Joe Marler, or you just come on. But there's no point talking about it. They have to make it a point of difference.
I agree, Ugo. And that's one of the areas that I'd be fearful for Scotland. Hepburn has done well off the bench, no question, right? And I think he can hold his own, although he's not as good as Marler. On the other side of the scrum, that's what will terrify a lot of Scotland fans. Because Andrew Ferguson, the guy is a machine. He's an exceptional rugby player. He's got an unbelievable engine on him. But if anything happens to him, he's going to have to play 80 minutes again. Oof. He's going to have to, because Elliot Miller-Mills is not, with the best will in the world, is not an international tight head. He can't be.
But say Ferguson does go 80, because, you know, Dan Cole's not going 80, and Dan Cole at 37 can still lock a scrum up, but he's not offering a huge amount in the loose. I dare say that Scotland starting front row is just as strong, if not stronger, than England.
And I
think Scotland's scrum, despite that penalty under the post in the end of the first half against France, has shown up pretty well. So it's just that drop-off, and how exactly Gregor Townsend can manage that, and whether Ferguson can put in something superhuman against a Genge-Marler combination, because you can bet that England will be looking to bring their props on earlier than Scotland.
Totally. And Ferguson will be targeted. And I think he's going to have to go 80. Like, this is... Scotland have an absolute crisis at tight head, because what you have here, you've got everyone in Scotland kind of on their knees praying that 47-year-old W.P. Nell was going to be fit to sit on the bench. So there's kind of no one. There's a few injuries, but there's no real heavy hitter coming through. So Elliot Miller-Mills, not a lot of people in Scottish rugby would have heard of him up a few weeks ago. He's now theoretically having to come off the bench for Ferguson if Ferguson tires or is injured in a Calcutta Cup game. I think that is a major area of concern for Scotland.
I couldn't agree more. But also, when you actually look at the player profiles, Dan Carr was starting to lock up the scrum. Play 15 minutes and then let's just see if we can elevate it. Because you look at the last... When Scotland played England at Twickenham, last year, in that last 10 minutes, Scotland looked fit, didn't they? And their skills were up to it, and that's why they end up going 80 metres and scoring that try. Bringing on Will Stewart, who's got a little bit more energy, but perhaps just not quite at the same ilk of a Dan Cole. So they need to target these people in the right areas. Dan Cole, just be happy with your scrum. But you can get after him in the loose. If Finn Russell wants to be just expressing the ball from width to width, that's where you can get after him. So I think it's real fascinating battles. And whilst the deficiencies and some of the positives in all of those players might look really obvious, how you really try and exploit them, that is the key to who's ultimately going to go and win this match.
I am going to let you guys in Edinburgh go in just a moment, but I did just want to ask Tom one. What's the narrative been about Scotland around kicking their penalties this week? Because let's face it, there were some opportunities against France where they didn't opt to go for the post. And Finn Russell, he's the only 100% kicker left in this Six Nations at the moment.
There's been very little. There was a bit of narrative in the days after the France game, Sarah. But, you know, you look at that, specifically that period just before the break. At the halftime break, they had a lot of possession in France's 22, and they were up against 14 men. France were conceding penalty after penalty after penalty. I know Sam Warburton in commentary on television was saying, no, they're making the right decision here. They need to keep scrumming. But the problem was there was an overlap and they didn't see it. You know, they had men, they just got locked in tunnel vision, and they came away from that period with 0 points. That was very, very costly. That's not why they lost the game. There was many other reasons why they lost the game, through their own lack of ruthlessness with the chances that they had, the TMO call at the end. It's just one that got away.
Just let go of the TMO.
Who's winning it this weekend, Tom?
Ugo, I think Scotland are going to win, but if you were to tell me that Xander Ferguson was going to go off injured after 15 or 20 minutes, I might flip. I don't think there's going to be a lot in it. I don't think a huge amount of what I've seen from this England team so far. Scratchy win against Italy, scratchy win against Wales. I know individually they're good players, but they're very early, embryonic stage in this development under Borthwick. So I'm not making any great claims about England. But historically, these games are close. Mm. And Scotland's wins against England are close. And I don't think that's going to be any different.
So it's three in a row. They won four in a row, Scotland, in the 70s. But one of them wasn't a championship game.
Yes.
As you outlined with your pal.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Before that, the last time Scotland won four in a row in a championship, 1890s. Horse and car time. Well, I mean, how... I know the Scotland are smarting and hurting, and understandably so after France, but how exciting a prospect is that for a Scotland player to make serious history? Like serious, serious, serious championship history.
Yeah, like, and they have, you know, this would be a kind of new level of making history, because they've done it by winning in France and they've done it by winning in Cardiff, winning at Twickenham, all of that recent history, amazing. To win four championship games in a row against England, as you say, since what was it, 1890s?
Yeah, 1890, 1891. I mean,
that's bonkers. You know,
that, well, it was a home nation's championship. France weren't involved. You know, it was it was a completely different thing.
Completely
and the world was a bit different.
The world has changed a little bit since then. But it's a great opportunity for Scotland. I think they're the better team. I think they're further down the line in their progression, a lot further. Home advantage. Kinghorn back in the team, bit of a Rolls-Royce player. Kyle Steyn back in the team, terrific player, underrated actually. Kyle Steyn, outstanding footballer. I think they have enough to beat this England team. But I go back to the point that we were talking about, Ugo, the backup to the front row, particularly the tight head, that really worries me.
And you just mentioned great opportunities there, Tom English. You've got Chris Jones in Edinburgh for a couple of nights. What are you going to do with him?
Oh, good point. You're fleeing town back to Stirling, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Sarah, I can't keep up with a young gun. I'm an old man.
Young gun.
Back in the day when Scotland were winning four games in a row against England, I was a boy about town. But I can't keep up with the young ones anymore.
Okay, well, Chris, you enjoy your evening, and Tom, you enjoy your drive back home.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Nice one.
Right, as Tom and Chris head off in their respective directions, more to come, of course, from me and Ugo, because, of course, we have the small matter of Ireland against Wales to talk through. All of that coming up after this.
Grab your VIP pass. We're delving into the secretive world of Formula One. Behind the scenes with two of the sport's biggest names, Mercedes and Williams.
This is not coal mining, this is Formula One motor racing.
As they build their new cars,
we want to be so much further ahead.
And face shocking headlines.
Here's Lewis Hamilton moving away from Mercedes.
I'm Joseph Fiennes, and from BBC Radio 5 Live, this is F1, back at base. Listen on BBC Sounds.
So, of course, on Saturday, the first match that gets us underway is Ireland against Wales. That was a 2:15 start in Dublin. We've known the Wales team since Monday, so I don't already need to tell you that there's one change to the starting 15 as Sam Costello starts. That pushes Ioan Lloyd to the bench. We've done all of that. Let's talk about Ireland, where there are seven changes, one positional. Again, most of this we were expecting because Ireland had really rotated against Italy anyway. Kieran Frawley coming in at fullback is the significant one because Hugo Keenan is out. He hasn't recovered from an injury. Caelan Doris is in. He was a question mark. He apparently hasn't trained until Thursday, so he's been rested because he had a lot of bumps and bruises. But he will come back. He's actually moving from 7 to 8. The other changes in the forwards, Tadhg Furlong, he returns. Tadhg Byrne returns. And then the back row, Omani and Van der Flier alongside Doris. And then in the backs, we get to see Gibson Park return, Bundyaki at 12, and I'd already mentioned Frawley at fullback. So, few worries about Caelan Doris in the week, but again, Ugo, this is a strong Ireland side. We know that already, don't we?
Yeah, every Ireland side is obviously very strong, and I think it's the respect that Ireland have for their opposition to try and give their best players every opportunity to go and continue this unbeaten run, because I think one of the strong points of this Welsh side is their back row. Caelan Doris, at his best, is one of the best. But what we've seen from Wales over the last couple of weeks, I mean, how good was Tommy Rafael at Twickenham? Like, didn't deserve to lose. Was, I thought, head and shoulders, the best player on the pitch. But this Ireland team, regardless who's in it, they'll be fine. They'll be okay. But they are missing. I think Hugo Keenan is a bigger miss than perhaps what people might give credit to. The amount of unseen work, I spend a lot of time watching this guy. He's always on the move. His fitness, durability, offering two sides to attack, the way in which he communicates and connects his players. He's so good and so selfless as a player. So I think they're big shoes to fill. The only, not question mark, but the only interesting thing with this Ireland side is, where does Craig Casey and Conor Murray sit in this? Conor Murray was on the bench out in France. then wasn't in the 23 last week as Craig Casey started and got an opportunity. Now Craig Casey's out of the squad and Conor Murray's on the bench. So they've obviously settled on these three. And then when you look at Munster, Craig Casey often plays ahead of Conor Murray there. So it's an interesting dynamic. And I guess for Andy Farrell, just trying to give everyone adequate enough game time to keep everyone really sharp. But yeah, that's the only position, obviously not starting. We know that's Gibson Park, but who your definite number two, number nine is, not 100% in my mind, maybe.
Well, Conor Murray, we know he might not necessarily make it to the next World Cup. 114th cap he'll be winning in Dublin on Saturday. Everyone's aware that maybe this is a bit of biding the time to allow Craig Casey to come through. But I agree with you. Why would you not maybe give him more game time off the bench if that is the plan anyway? Gibson Park was on the bench last week. So I completely understand your thinking. I don't think it's been that much spoken about this week around the scrum half selection in particular. Something that has been talked about a lot is the situation with Frawley at fullback. He plays a lot of rugby, actually, at fly half. He only made his Six Nations debut after he came off the bench in Paris earlier this month. He did get a cap in the World Cup warm-up games. He played against Italy back in August. But I did actually listen into a press conference earlier on this week where Simon Easterby was talking about Frawley, because, of course, whenever you watch these open training sessions, you can see where all the players are lining up and everyone in the press pack tries to figure out who's going to be selected where. And there were so many questions around him, so clearly he was going to have some kind of involvement. And Easterby said they're really excited about him, not just because of 15 on his back, it's the fact that he can play fly half and centre as well. And it goes one of two ways when you're a versatile player, Hugo. It either goes down the route of it's fantastic that you can play so many different positions, you're going to be more used, or you never cement your name on one shirt and you miss out.
Yeah, I think your value increases during a World Cup year because, oh, he can play 10, he can play centre, he can play 15. Right, okay, the squad size gets a little bit, well, shrinks a little bit, therefore you're a shoo-in. From an English perspective, just comparison, well, it was the same with Henry Slade. He started out as, oh, he's definitely going to be an international 10. I know he's definitely going to be a 12. I think he's definitely a 13. He can probably play a bit of 15. Elliot Daly, exactly the same as well. So whilst you offer so much to squad, which is brilliant, individually, you probably end up finding yourself getting 20 caps, not having started many, across four different positions. But with regards to this team and the strength of this team and their sole purpose, their purpose is so much bigger and greater than any individual player. They're trying to become the first team to go back-to-back Grand Slams. And so for any of the players, you'll just be thrilled to get an opportunity, especially when it's in a position which is so settled, like at 15.
Did just want to give a quick special mention on the replacements bench for Ollie Yeager. He could make his debut for Ireland, not just in the Six Nations, but an overall debut. He's 28 years old, had to bide his time slightly there, but good luck to him as well. But Hugo, we have spoken about Ireland-Wales a lot this week, and it's really hard to say anything other than how many points Ireland are going to win this by. And that narrative is beginning to be a bit uncomfortable.
See, I flipped it this week. I think Ireland will win. I'm confident with that. Because they're that ruthless and because they've become that predictability with their winning, I'm now measuring them against how many are they going to concede. Simon Easterby, I mentioned after game week one, I think as a defensive coach, he's just doing so, so well. He is brilliant. And so let's not spend or exhaust any more time saying, well, Ireland are so fluid and so cohesive and it doesn't matter who's playing, they still operate as great. Let's look at their defence. Because the mark of a really, really good teams is their ability and their appetite to continue to persist, to work within the constraints of which you have to try and suffocate a team. How ruthless were they against Italy last week? Nil pois. Nothing conceded. So let's see where they are this week of their defence.
Yeah, nil point. You said it right there, Hugo. Right then. Now, we can't talk about France and Italy just yet because they haven't named their teams yet. But do listen to the pod tomorrow where Chris will be up in Edinburgh. It will be worth listening to for a couple of reasons. France have to name a new captain, of course, because Aldrete is out. Also, there'll be a little bit of talk, no doubt, about Antoine Dupont playing the sevens this weekend. But also for Italy, this is fascinating. Tommy Allen, he has pulled out of the international squad for physical and mental health reasons, which we completely respect and we wish him all the best. It means that Lewis Leiner has been called into the Italy squad. Could he be capped straight away so he's captured? You think so?
Well, I just thought the timing of it was quite interesting. He announces that he's leaving Harlequins to go to Italy, and then he gets pulled into the Italian squad that same week. I thought, okay, cool. Off the back of Tommy Allen taking some time away from the game. Yeah, chuck him in. Chuck him in. And for like Lewis Leiner, he sat there thinking, hang on, he's been so close on a couple of occasions with England, and I reckon the final nail in the coffin was Manny Feo-Urbosa, a young fella who's been jettisoned ahead of him, and he's like, okay, well, that could be done. So I'm thrilled for him. I hope he gets an opportunity, because sometimes, well, quite often actually, you see players within the Gallagher Prem who are of an international standard just won't get international opportunity. So for Lewis Leiner to still hopefully play at an international level in the Six Nations would be class.
Right then, Hugo, it has been quite the day of team news. Five changes for England. I think that's going to be the main headlines. But don't forget, full commentary. Ireland against Wales is on Five Sports Extra 2:15 kickoff. And then, of course, move over to Five Live for Scotland against England. That one, 4:45 start. And then France against Italy on Sunday. Again, 3:00 start. And that special rivals pod was out yesterday for everything that was Ireland against Wales. Right then, Hugo, go and have a wonderful evening.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
My name's Joe Wilkinson, and I'm doing a podcast because I love football. But what I love more is the idea of being friends with a professional footballer. The footballer I'd like to be friends with is Patrick Bamford. Hello, Patrick. Will you be my friend?
That's yet to be decided.
Okay, not what I was hoping.
My Mate's a Footballer is a BBC Sounds podcast with me, Patrick Bamford, and Joe Wilkinson.
If you weren't married, who would your ideal date be?
Julia Roberts.
That was quick. If I was you, I'd have popped a pause in.
Search for My Mate's a Footballer on BBC Sounds.